webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution. And now, here's Glenn Klein online.
Thank you, Robert Moore, and greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online. It's hump day, Wednesday, November 2nd, 2011, the only second day of November 2011 in the history of humanity. All your bags are packed, you're ready to go. We're flying over where we do the show. Are you ready to come and share with those in the know? You're leaving on a jet plane, gonna come to Tampa to preach the good news. Are you ready?
I am so ready. I'm not ready.
Well, that sounds about right, and that sounds par for the course. Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen. We're glad to have you along for this pre-Gospel Revolution Summit Number 2 webcast. It is 1 minute after 9 o'clock on the East Coast of the United States. We have 1 hour to discuss, to meditate, to contemplate, to revel in the Gospel of grace, the Gospel of peace, and the one that has... frankly, let us down this journey is online with us right now, and please, not in song, but do welcome online the president, the founder, and as I learned recently, a Kentucky colonel.
This is true.
Of the, we're gonna have to find out that story. Please welcome online the most high holy reverend, Michael Williams, right now in Houston on his way to Tampa. Michael!
Hey! Good evening, Glenn. I am getting ready for the trip. Talk about a trip, though. It is, I always love that opening, to the show. It is, I get so tickled anymore at it. It's like, wow, I really sound mentally challenged.
Well, there's a certain accuracy with that. I don't think you. That's funny that you think that. I don't think you sound mentally. I just dig it.
Well, I do too. But yeah. But you know, I'm good with mentally challenged. I have no problem with that.
We like to challenge the mental. That is for sure. you are just to give the beautiful humans an idea of what happens prior to a Mike Williams. Road trip. Here it is. Your flight leaves just in a matter of hours, literally. Are you packed? Are you ready to go?
No, nothing is packed. I did find my suitcase. It is sitting in the bedroom. And Jeff had a list of things that I needed to gather up to bring with me as far as electronics that got left here at the house that we'll need for the summit. And that's about 4 items, and I laid those down at the foot of the bed. But everything will work out fine. I mean, geez, it's just a flight.
No, I understand, but I just want to give the insight to the assembled masses across the globe. A lot of people are going to be listening to this webcast because we know most people do listen on the archive. By the way, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening live, wherever you're listening from, and it's a few minutes after 9 o'clock on the east coast of the U.S. of A., you are cordially invited and requested to call the program right now at 1-800-436-3260. 1-800-436-3260 is the toll-free line. Sean is waiting in studio and waiting to greet Michael and all the summit goers. If you're calling outside the U.S. or Canada, you can call us at 813-425-5773. 813-425-5773 is the number. Let me hear that phone ring now. We got to get the ball rolling right away. But as I was saying, Michael, that most people and many people will be listening to this program either during the summit this weekend. I'm sure a lot of folks catch up with the webcast on the weekend. Or even after the summit, what are you planning on sharing and trying to accomplish this weekend in Tampa, Florida?
Well, this is, I finally am at peace with it. I've done quite a bit of research and study to prepare for this. A lot of times right before something like this, I'm really kind of taking time to, you know, to probably just listen, to the CDs and stuff. But, this time, you know, there's so much there that I need to do. It's like I have to leave it alone until I get there and organize myself as I go. Because there's a lot of material to cover. We are going to be going into the letters of the disciples and speaking as opposed to the letters of Paul, who was not a disciple of Jesus. He was an apostle, but he was not a disciple of Jesus. And the disciples seem to have a decidedly different point of view than what Paul did. So we're going to go through that, and we're going to look and see what their point of view is, and why, you know, do they tell us why they have their point of view, and not only compare that to Paul's teaching, but then to go back to the scriptures, the law, the Psalms, and the prophets, and compare it to that, and see whether or not these things are true or not. So it's our right and our heritage to do this. So I know it is difficult for a lot of people to take on that type of a heritage, to have the right to examine even the letters of the apostles to see whether or not they agree with them or not. But you do have that. In fact, Isaiah calls doing that very thing, especially pertaining to any teachings of judgment, it's your heritage to judge any teaching that still contains judgment in it after the cross. That is the foundation of the entire gospel revolution in my heart and mind, is the gospel of peace, which is the understanding that all wrath and anger, judgment, no future judgment coming, all of it took place at the cross. And Isaiah, in his most graphic prophecy about this, closed out that particular part of his prophecy by saying that after this happens at the cross and a declaration and a covenant of peace is established that will never be removed off the earth, he said, you got to call these guys out. You've got to speak up when you hear prophecies of judgment. You have to speak up and you have to denounce the teachings. He didn't say to denounce the people, but he said, you have to. You know, that's quite amazing that we have an instruction like that in a prophecy about the cross, because none of this is about us, but here is this instruction to everyone that after this manifestation of the cross takes place, this is the one instruction that we have. I don't know of another one, actually, but one instruction that we have, and that is that any teaching, any tongue that rises in judgment, the very same prophet said we are supposed to speak up against that prophecy. So we do. I've been doing that for several years now, quite a few years. I don't care where it comes from. Every time somebody tells me the end of the world's coming, I say, not going to happen. And, you know, I've been
we yes, you have. We just had another one recently from Harold Camping. And, of course, it came, October 21st was his latest date. It went and came without notice this time from the media, because they're even catching up to it. And of course, many of us on the Gospel Revolution have been involved in calling out those that judge in many different ways. Michael, what's the difference between the instruction that we have from the prophet and the instruction that Christianity gives the Christians?
Well, the instruction that Christianity gives the Christians come from the law, from unfulfilled prophecy, and from law that, according to what Jesus did, he abolished all law between God and man, and also the teachings of Christ, which Paul instructed us to that we needed to leave behind the elementary teachings of Christ and move on into perfection, which the perfection was purchased for us at the cross. There's nothing for us to do. How do you move into perfection? When Paul gave his testimony, he says just a change of mind. You've just got to accept that in God's eyes, you are perfect. You're righteous and you're holy. But, you know, we are taught by Christianity to judge people based on their actions and deeds. And we never judge prophecies. Christianity never judges a prophecy of judgment. They all sit back and say, oh, well, maybe. Yeah, and all branches of Christianity. It doesn't make any difference where you go. They never judge judgment. And that's the only judgment we're supposed to have. We're supposed to judge judgment. And we're supposed to determine that all judgment, anyone who speaks about an angry and a wrathful God, we're supposed to call him out on it.
If we don't, or if we do, what is God's view and opinion of us that are involved in either that process of doing it or refusing to do it?
Well, he's just really ticked off, you know. of course, the culmination of all of this is that God's not mad at anybody. This is your heritage. God's not going to get mad at you for not carrying out your heritage, but you see, voices have to rise. Voices have to speak up. If this is the crux of the matter, just think about it a moment, folks. If the gospel of peace is the crux of the matter, God is not angry anymore at all. No judgment, no final, the final day has already come for the human race. The end of the world, has already come. The end of that whole world of judgment is what Jesus was talking about. It's all over. And if this is hanging over the human race when it is not true, can you imagine how much of even just our mental and emotional power to be creative in life is completely stifled by this terminal mentality? And the fear and the dread of the end of the world, judgment is coming, God's angry, has destroyed so many lives on this planet. So I take that heritage to heart, and every chance that I get, I enjoy speaking up against it. And the amazing thing is that every time they prophesy judgment, it doesn't make any difference who it is or what judgment they've prophesied, whether it's Pat Robertson or the Van Impies or whatever else there is out there. Every time they have been wrong, and I have been right, because I've said, this is not going to happen. Now, you might say, well, how in the world do you know it's not going to happen, Mike? Now, I can't tell you whether or not a disaster is going to take place or not. It never happened at the hand of God. That's over with. That ended 2,000 years ago, and it's completely done. And, you know, goodness gracious, Pat Robertson has had God's judgment down in Florida, burning down northern Florida. God couldn't get down to Disney World, where they had just started celebrating gay days, and he said God's judgment was coming on, and then the fires broke out in Florida, and he said it was the judgment of God, but God just couldn't get near Disney World for some reason. But all of this stuff is just so ludicrous, it's heinous to the mind and the heart.
You know,
and these things are being taught to children in Sunday school.
Yeah, and you deal very effectively within your upcoming book about that very issue.
Yeah.
We can safely predict, folks, that there are going to be calamities and tragedies and crises and disaster. It's coming.
Earthquakes, wars, and rumors of wars.
Yes, and financial and all kinds of stuff.
Yes.
But we can say, because we understand, A, what the scriptures are, and B, that those scriptures were completely and utterly fulfilled in Christ, that God has absolutely, positively nothing to do with them. Then you say, well, why do they happen? because it's called life, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. We are living and breathing on a planet where stuff happens. And I cleaned that up for the radio. This is Glenn Klein Online. We got this email in from our dear brother, Grant Miller. Now, it reads better than it will sound, but it's worth reading on the radio. Grant writes, and he is prolific in his writing, Christianity equals effort, which equals failure, which equals sin, which equals guilt, which equals shame, which equals fear, which equals paralysis. What to do? Well, more effort, which leads to more failure, which leads to a focus on me. So what do they feel? Determination, exasperation, double the effort, then desperation. The gospel equals gift. It equals righteousness. Then it equals confidence. It equals freedom. It equals joy. It equals peace. It equals rest. Christ, his sacrifice, and resurrection are all consuming. What do I feel? I feel ranging from laughter at the simplicity of the gospel to crying due to overwhelming awe and gratitude. I cannot stop speaking of the all-sufficient sacrifice and resurrection of Christ. And proving that he cannot stop speaking of it, our first caller is online, our North Manchester, Indiana senior correspondent and the Long John Miller of the Gospel Revolution is online with us. Please welcome online Mr. Grant Miller. Grant!
Hey, Glenn. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Grant. Good to hear you,
buddy. I didn't read that, Glenn.
What, was I not supposed to?
No, that was fine. I just didn't know you was going to read it.
Did I? Was it a good rendition?
Yes, you did great.
Of course, what the hell are you going to say? No, you suck. Grant, thank you so much for calling. How are you doing, my brother?
I'm doing good. Doing great. Just got home kind of late. Darla and I was out closing a couple pools, and they took longer than I thought. And so we wound up wrapped up the day kind of late, but here I am, and I wanted to call in.
All right, so we appreciate it. All right, so for the folks that don't know, Grant is in the pool business up there in Indiana. I guess you will be closing. Have you had snow yet?
Nope, no snow.
All right, so
I think we closed the last two pools today, so we're done for this.
So you guys that have been following the webcast know that Grant had a very severe injury on his motorcycle, as he likes to say, But you're out and about actually closing down pools now with Darla. That's pretty good news.
Yeah, yep. It tires me out. I didn't realize how, you know, out of shape and weak I've become. But, hey, I'm glad to be able to get out and around, so.
Well, that's very good news for us as well. And so what's going on tonight? What you got on your heart?
Well, first thing, I really like this article from Mike about Richard Moll talking about giving up self-righteousness, and then these 10 reasons, and I thought, you know, maybe I'll pick out a couple that I like the best and just mention them, but I got to looking, and I don't even know which two I would choose, seriously.
All right, no, with your permission, I would like, this is very brief, folks. This came to you guys who are on the email list. And if you are not, and you're listening to the webcast, and how would you know that I'm talking about this other than if you were listening to the webcast? But if you're not getting the weekly e-newsletter, just go to gospelrevolution.com, and right at the upper right-hand portion of the homepage, you can just sign up for the e-newsletter. But I'd like to read this, Grant, and then we can talk about it, okay?
Yes.
This Michael just wrote the other day. He says, "Dear Gospel Revolutionaries and friends, today I was having my regular morning conversation with Richard Mull. As usual, I learned something. Richard told me, after listening to your The Faith of God series for the third time, I made a decision. I am giving up on my own righteousness. Now, I have known Richard Mull for almost 20 years, Michael says. And believe me when I tell you that he gave up his own righteousness long before today. However, Richard's statement and reaffirmation rang inside me like a church bell on a crisp fall day in Vermont. Richard told me that giving up his own righteousness was the most important decision he has ever made. Truer words have never been spoken. The ramifications of that decision may indeed place it at the top of every human's list of most important things to do. Why is it just this important? Well, reflecting on what we have all learned over the years, when self-righteousness is forsaken, it has a direct, immediate, lifelong, and progressive effect on the soul. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the top 10 reasons to abandon self-righteousness. Number 10, it allows for peace to elevate in the soul in all situations. Number 9, bitterness loses its grip. Number 8, deceit loses its charm. Number 7, implacability, which means unwillingness to resolve personal issues, it dissipates. Number 6, an attitude of mercy replaces mercilessness. I think I added an extra syllable in there. Number 5, understanding oneself ensues, acceptance of one's contradictions released. This is the top 10 reasons to abandon self-righteousness. Number 4, self-justification and having to prove others wrong departs. Number 3, self-pity becomes painfully obvious. Number 2, judgment loses its desired result of having to prove I am right. And the number one reason to abandon self-righteousness, all join in a drum roll, please. And the number one reason to abandon self-righteousness, ladies and gentlemen, guilt is reduced until it totally evaporates. Then Michael says, please be assured that this is not a litmus test for how much self-righteousness one is dealing with. These are simply things that Paul taught would either accompany righteousness or things that self-righteousness produces. Still, the list is useful. Just do not use it to measure others' self-righteousness. But feel free to compare it to your own state of a vital, logical, rational mental disposition. Even God's law was only supposed to be used to judge oneself. Watch and learn. Love you, Michael L. Williams. Good stuff, Mikey.
Yeah, it was. You know, we're going to have to start doing a segment called Mulling It Over.
Oh, I like that. Mulling It Over. I like that.
Because my morning conversations with Richard Mull results in this just virtually every time. So we'll have to do a segment called Mulling It Over.
So, Grant, obviously you read that. It spurred on certain thoughts. And having heard it over the air now, what are your feelings about abandoning and how important it is to abandon self-righteousness?
Well, it's, I don't know. I don't know how I would say it's important, but having gone through it and understanding and identifying with each one of these 10, you know, some more, some less, whatever, I don't know how I would rank it in importance, but it's almost like, how did we get to hear the truth? Why have we entered into this great salvation, understanding our redemption? And that's what these 10 are. It's just like a journey, you know, understand the more we believe, the more we understand who we are, what God has done, what the sacrifice means and the power of the resurrection. These 10 just begin to take place. It's not like these are anything you have to focus on or direct our attention toward. They just begin to happen. It's like a grapevine, just its roots are buried in the dirt. It puts forth no effort, but fruit produced. It doesn't make any, it's not aware of it, it's not noticing. And yet, you know, we are set free. We do see areas where it's so freeing. Instead of feelings of anger and frustration and pity and all and various ones of these things that we read in the list that bind us down and hold us back, we begin to feel feelings toward people that bring joy and peace Not that it matters, but it sure is beautiful, I guess, to feel it and see it.
Michael, you said, there's no doubt about that, Grant, but Michael, you said that the number one reason to abandon self-righteousness is that guilt is reduced until it totally evaporates. And our society, and certainly Christianity, has taught us that guilt is a good thing and that it's a necessary thing. What's your answer to that?
Poppycock.
But why is it poppycock? Poppycock. I've never heard you say poppycock before.
Well, I try to increase my vocabulary occasionally. But, you know, even psychiatry and psychology says that the absence of guilt is a sign of pathological behavior. And
Wait. Your psychology says that the absence of guilt is a psychopathic behavior.
Yes, it's a sign of psychopathic behavior. And but see, here's the thing. See, you're going to get rid of guilt one way or the other. You either numb yourself to the guilt, which that is the psychopathic behavior. People that have been bombarded with the rules and laws of religions around this world and Christianity, the one that we deal with all the time, see, it is a pathological because it's your pathology. You have to harden your heart and not care anymore to get rid of guilt. But you see, psychology and psychiatry does not know there is a way to get rid of guilt without it being a pathological thing. This riddance of guilt opens up the heart and the mind to feel more than you could feel before. And just like Grant was saying, you know, you have compassion on people now. You have mercy, all of these things. It's just the opposite to the absence of guilt that psychology and psychiatry labels as a pathology for people who have got to the point to where that they're numb to what they do. This is not a freedom from guilt based on numbness. It's a freedom from guilt based on the joy and the peace that comes from not being under the judgment and the anger and the wrath of God, and to not be under any laws or rules that causes you to feel guilty. Just that statement from the from psychiatry and psychology around the world is an indication of the psychology that we're trying to present of the gospel. Just think about it. They actually believe that the only way to be free from guilt is to become psychopathic.
Now, how fair would it be to say, Michael, that people that are involved in sociological psychopathic behavior actually are not free from guilt, but they are completely and utterly bound by guilt?
That's absolutely true, and they are bound by guilt instead of being free from it. They're so bound to it they've had to numb themselves to it, which is what the mind does with things it can't resolve. It just simply numbs itself, and the emotions numbs itself. Once you get to the point where you've exhausted yourself and you just keep beating yourself up over and over and over again, the guilt doesn't leave. You've just hardened yourself to where that you can't feel anymore.
How fair is it to say that by numbing yourself to guilt, if you will, that more is produced out of a feeling of guilt, and that the Christian concept of being punished for your guilt, the person that is going down this pathological road, if you will, that their mindset is, listen, I'm going to be punished anyway. I might as well just go for the whole enchilada.
Absolutely. You know, I did a study in the early days of this about the gospel of peace, and I wanted to do a study on serial killers, people who would indiscriminately kill people they did not know, had no emotional contact to them at all. And I wanted to know what type of mind could do that. And this study has actually been going on because I've kept track as new serial killers have come along. I've looked into these, and there was another one that I just sat and listened to again just within the last several months. I cannot tell you which one it was. And but each one of them, I thought, well, what is the, maybe it's an economic thing. But there was people who were serial killers who were from poor families and wealthy families, and all in between. I thought, well, parents, maybe they grew up without parents, one parent, you know, whatever. It's all over the board as far as parent and lack thereof.
And the involvement and the direction of the parenting that those people took. You got people
yes.
that were serial killers who had abusive parents and
yes.
and very doting parents. But what was what is the one common denominator that is generally true amongst serial killers, Michael, that you found?
The one thing, and it's funny how they just brush over it, and because they don't zero in on it, but every one of them brushes over. And oh yes, they had an extremely religious upbringing in their early childhood by a grandmother. A parent, even an aunt or an uncle or whatever, very severe religious upbringing. And that is the only across-the-board common denominator that I could find. So that in itself addresses really what we're talking about here, is that guilt becomes, and these, you wouldn't believe how many of them of these serial killers came to a point where they believed that they had blasphemed the Holy Spirit, they had committed the unpardonable sin, there was no hope for them, they were going to hell no matter what they did. And that kind of judgment, feelings of wrongdoing. It's not freedom from guilt, it's a hardness of heart about even wrongdoing and about inflicting pain on somebody else. In fact, the brain warps to such a degree under that heavy belief that one's eternal destiny has been eternally jeopardized and cannot be changed, that it warps the mind in such and the emotions in a way to where that survival, it's kind of like a computer shutting down. And it, you know, it doesn't run all of its programs, and it goes in safe mode. Well, this is like almost like a safe mode, if you will. So it eliminates all of these normal reactions to hurting somebody else. They can't feel when they're hurting somebody else. But see, if they felt when they hurt somebody else, they would feel this guilt. Now, this process is a psychological, it is a pathology that develops in these people. And it is just so clear what the root cause of it is. But I'm telling you, even the people who study these things, they tried to look for, in each one of them, they're also looking for that common denominator. But they look at everything under the sun as possibilities. But even though they recognize that this deep religious upbringing in early childhood is there, they ignore it completely in their outcome as to what a common denominator could be.
And as objective as we try to be, folks, we need to tell you that, to our knowledge, there has never been a serial killer that has embraced the gospel, as far as we know. But we do know this, that there have been scores of serial killers that were raised in classic, traditional, historical Christianity that have gone on, including people like Adolf Hitler, who was raised as a Catholic and still to this day has never been excommunicated by the Roman Catholic Church, who committed atrocities and mass murder beyond description. We know what Hitler did in the Nazis. Hitler said that he was doing the work of the Lord, And Jeff Robertson had a very interesting comment on his Facebook page on people today, as a matter of fact, that said that they were involved in the work of the Lord, trusting God, looking for God's direction. And well, you can go to Jeff Robertson's Facebook page, and if you're not a friend with Jeff, friend him so you can see that. It was some very direct comments that were very poignant. Grant, what are your feelings and your thoughts hearing Michael's discussion on guilt?
Yeah, I was really enjoying it, and that I think that earns the number one spot, because guilt, it just seems like it is the feeling or the thought pattern that drives us insane the most, that haunts us as a Christian or trying to live according to the will of God. Guilt, you just never match up. And the more you try, the more you feel. And so resting, coming to rest, coming to understand the sacrifice and the resurrection of Christ and what that means to us, seems like is what sets us free from guilt. Nothing else. I tried it, you know, and we all have. Probably everyone that's listening has. So I enjoyed everything Mike was saying there. It does earn that number one spot for sure.
No doubt about it. And I cannot recommend not only giving up your own self-righteousness. I'll say it this way. Allowing the gospel to take you out of your own self-righteousness, which takes you out of guilt. This is a super natural process that just happens as you contemplate, meditate, stay in the gospel of peace and the gospel of grace. Cannot recommend the gospel enough. That's why we do this every week. Yeah. Grant, we love you. We got to fly.
Love you, Grant.
Okay, I got a couple questions sometime, but I'll be back.
Next week. And okay. Michael, allegedly, rumor has it that Mike Williams will be in the studio in the Bay of the Holy Spirit 1 week from today. So we would please call early and often, like you did, Grant.
Okay.
We love you.
I'll see you,
Grant.
Feel good. Get some rest.
Yes.
There's the pool guy.
Bye-bye.
The Long John Miller.
He changed his name. I can't remember what it was.
I think we came up with Long John Miller.
No, he changed it himself.
Oh, he did.
Everybody has the right to come up with their own.
All right. Well, Grant, if you're listening still on your computer, or if you listen to the archive, if it's not Long John Miller of the Gospel Revolution, please correct us. We will correct that post haste. And if you guys want a title, even if we've never heard from you before, we know that titles are very important in religion, and we want titles. We want lots of titles. So if you want a title, whatever it is, we even have a left-wing lunatic named Mike Kolb, and rumor has it, again, that he and Letitia will be in attendance at this coming Gospel Revolution Summit that starts Friday night at the Green Iguana, right next to the Days Inn of Tampa Bay Airport. And for more information, there's still time for you guys to get in on that if you want. Just contact the office, call Jeff. The number is at the top left-hand corner of the homepage at gospelrevolution.com. We've got Tom Tonsky from the Hall of Fame, the Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio, that we're going to be getting to, and we will do that right after we return right here on the Gospel Revolution Radio Network.
In the beginning, God said, "Let us make man in our own image, male and female, and call them Adam." And it was good. In the fall, the image of God was corrupted, but not forever.
When God created man in his own image, and we're not talking about somebody else creating an image, we're talking about God himself creating man in his own image. And then the fall of man, God knew he would have to destroy his own image. Let me tell you something I know now about the new creation, that your heart is designed by God to suffer, endure, and recover from all loss, no matter how horrific the loss is.
The Image of God. This 6-CD series is available for $48 plus shipping and handling, or download it now for $24 by clicking the download link at gospelrevolution.com. The Image of God. Get your copy today.
Thank you, Robbie Miller. Robbie Moore. I got Grant Miller on the head. Robert Moore at the last Gospel Revolution Summit in Houston, Texas, the first one. It was so great to meet him. We have been humping this series for weeks, Mike, and we've heard so many good reports about this series. Why is it important to understand what's up with us not being in the image of God anymore?
Oh, it really is. It's a powerful thing. You know, I was looking at all this again, as again, it always comes with all of these observations. And, you know, when God created man in his image, he said it was good. But, you know, when God recreated the entire human race in the new creation, made us all one with himself, he said it's perfect. This ain't just good, folks. This is perfect. This is the perfect work of God. And something that's perfect is not going to fail. But the good work of God did get corrupted, and that image, and even as God himself said, if you create something in your own image, you'll have to destroy it completely. And so he did destroy that image completely in the body of one man. That's what people don't understand, though, is that God did destroy the entire human race in the body of one man. That Jesus became all of us. He became the law. He took all of us into himself. And in that amazing moment at his death on the cross, he obliterated all distance between God, man, Jew, Gentile, male, female, gay, straight. He obliterated all of these dividing issues and created us all as one in God. I was talking to somebody the other day. I said, you know, this is our biggest challenge right now, and that is to help people's minds overcome this. When they think about God, they look up, or there's this distance that we obviously still see a distance between us and God. But you see, there is no distance between you and God. God and you are one. You can't point a direction and find God, because that is within you. That is you. And God became a man so man could become God. And we all became one together at the cross. And that mixture will never be separated. That incredible fusion of God and man together in one being, one single being in the eyes of God, one single being in the eyes of God that we have become because of a perfect work, not a good work. That good work had to be destroyed, and it was destroyed. And God brought out of that destruction a perfect man.
Oh, that is good preaching, Roberts, right there. Do you guys understand that God said that the best we could do, that our righteousness, the best that we could do, is like filthy rags to him? And do you understand, if you look in the Hebrew, of what the meaning of filthy rags is actually a used feminine napkin. Now, it's interesting that there's a blood reference there, but that is how God views our righteousness, our goodness.
Yeah.
That's how good it is. And this, we have a perfect work that we get to share now. We have a perfect sacrifice. We have a perfect Savior that has literally succeeded in his mission to redeem all humanity. Gay and straight, we're equal in God's eyes. Even black and white and Hispanic and Asian and Native American and natives of all tongues.
No difference.
no difference. We Are One, folks. What a great name for a book. This is Glenn Klein Online. Glad to have you with us. We've got about 15 minutes left. We got a line available since Grant dropped off. Give us a call at 1-800-436-3260. Toll free in Canada and the U.S., 800-436-3260. If you are listening live outside the U.S., we want to hear from you at 813-425-5773. And we are so happy to hear from this next gentleman, who's got a great story. I hope to hear from him tonight, and we have not heard from him in a little bit. Let us go to the hometown of the Football Hall of Fame in beautiful Canton, Ohio, our postmaster of the Gospel Revolution. Please welcome online Mr. Tom Tonsky. Tom!
Hello, Glenn.
Hello, Tom.
Hello, Mike.
How are you?
Hey, Tom.
How you guys? I don't think they had sanitary napkins back in the old Testament.
Dude, you know they were doing something to plug that stuff up. You know they were doing
that. I know. You would not believe. You know what just happened to me?
What just happened?
I pulled myself away from my favorite TV show, Modern Family, and I said, I got to listen to the show tonight. Okay. So I, as soon as I'm ready, my caller ID comes up on my TV, and it's a fella that I haven't talked to probably in 10 years. Okay. I used to go to church with him. So I pick up the phone, say hello. It's like 9:01. And he calls me, and guess what he was doing?
Since you asked, he was listening to the webcast.
No.
No.
He invited me to church.
Oh.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. I feel bad for him, but he invited me to his church because they got a new preacher. And he thought that I would enjoy listening to the preacher. And he says, do you still go to church? And I says, no, I haven't gone to church for about 7 years. And then we got to talking, and I really don't think he bargained for what he was going to get when he called my house. He got about we talked for about a half hour.
In a nutshell, Tom, what did you say to him?
I just shared with him why I don't go to church anymore and where I'm at, you know.
Yeah, but what did you say specifically?
I said I told him initially, I think I said, I don't go to church anymore because most of all, I don't believe that the church preaches the gospel. That kind of took him off. I said, basically, what I'm trying to tell you is I don't believe that God's going to punish anybody in hell anymore. I haven't believed that for quite a long time. And then we just got into it and just talked. He was very nice. As a matter of fact, when we hung up, he asked if we could meet sometime for breakfast.
Wonderful.
And I thought, yeah, I'd love to.
Well, you and Knappenberger got to invite him to breakfast and double team him.
Well, we all used to go together. See, me and Tim kind of used to tag team in as adult Sunday school teachers, and we used to spend a lot of time together. Me, Tim, and this particular guy. We had about six guys that used to kind of hang out, and. But it was very thoughtful, and I told him I really appreciated him thinking about me and actually taking the initiative to, you know, invite me to church. I says, but I really don't belong in a church right now because I just...
Because you are a part of a church already.
Well, yeah,
Because you are the church. You're the walking, talking, living, breathing church like everybody else on the planet. They just... don't know it. Do you know what an affront it is, people, to call a four-walled building the church? What an insult to the work of Christ.
Yeah.
But speaking, Tom, as you were, of cordial invitation, to take a little twist on it, you invited yourself recently. to something.
I invited myself down to George's house.
Wait. You got to explain the whole thing and the background.
Well, I wanted to watch a Steeler game.
You wanted to watch? You, all right, now, you live in Canton, Ohio, but you're a Pittsburgh Steeler football fan.
I was actually raised almost closer to Pittsburgh than he is in Pennsylvania. I was born right on the river, right at about 30 miles from Pittsburgh, right on the West Virginia-Ohio border, right on the river. And I can take 22 out of my hometown of Steubenville and be in Pittsburgh in 25 minutes. So Pittsburgh, that's all we ever watched. Pittsburgh is, you know, after you went to the prom, you wanted to go to dinner. You went to Pittsburgh in a nice restaurant. So Pittsburgh's kind of like a part of us.
And for those of you guys that are listening around the world that may or may not be aware of American football, the Pittsburgh Steelers
are America's team.
They are the greatest football franchise in the history of the National Football League. And literally, for those that are from or have followed the Pittsburgh Steelers, it might as well be Roman Catholicism. I mean, it's worse. Okay, it's a religion. I've got a good friend of mine in northern Wisconsin that is such a Pittsburgh Steelers nutcase that he's got the Pittsburgh Steelers logo, and the Pittsburgh Steelers only have their logo on one side of their football helmet, and he's got the Pittsburgh Steelers logo, does John Nicolau, tattooed on his left shoulder.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Good for him.
All right, so had you ever talked to Geo Howell before?
No, we had never talked, and we really don't even communicate much online except like somebody's thing or, you know, comment a little bit on
little Facebook action or whatever.
Yeah, and that's it, you know. So anyhow, I'm sitting here and living in Canton, like this weekend, the Steelers are playing the Ravens, and I'm going to have to go to a sports bar to watch the game because we got to watch the stinking Browns.
Right, because you're closer to Cleveland,
where
the very lowly Cleveland Browns reside.
Yeah, and it's all black. They won't play them.
Right.
But anyhow, so I typed to him. I told him my dilemma. And I said, why don't you invite me down to your house so I can watch the game down there and we can get to meet each other anyway? Because I want to meet the guy.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you want to meet him.
You know what's the story?
No.
So anyway, this is really cool. Here's what happened. So I tell my wife, and she thinks I'm crazy, okay? He says, yeah, come on down. It's about 125 miles. So... and the kids are going nuts. My son came over and he says, you don't even know this guy. What if he's a serial killer? What if they're wife swappers? You know, stuff like that.
All right, but now wait a minute. Whoa. He's equating a serial killer to a wife swapper.
Well, whatever. You know, what he's saying is, you don't even know these people. I said, he's my Gospel Revolution brother. You know, what the hell?
How bad could he be?
Yeah, how bad? He can't be no worse than me, you know, the chiefest of sinners. So anyway, my wife says, man, you owe me big time for this, right?
Right.
So we get in the car and we take off. So we're driving, we catch a little game traffic outside of Pittsburgh. And then
by the way, folks, this game was a huge football game. This is Pittsburgh Steelers against the New England Patriots. At the very least, you got to go to a sports bar to watch it.
Oh, yeah. I'll have to go this weekend because I can't drive down there again.
But you get in your car and you drive over 2 hours.
Oh, yeah.
To George and Bonnie Howell's place in Monongahela.
In the boonies.
In the boonies. They're in the boonies, right.
It ain't in no town or nothing. And we go off the track. It looks like Deliverance out in the woods. They got a big detour. I don't know where in the heck I'm going. And it's western Pennsylvania, so everything's built up on the sides of a big hill. And we're driving around. Finally, I come driving up the road, and I see him out in front of his house. So we pull in the garage and or pull in the driveway and shake hands. And his wife, Bonnie, she's kind of like my wife is. Like, what has these two knuckleheads got?
Exactly. That's what happens.
Yeah. So we sit down and we're making small talk, right? Just talking and getting to know each other. So naturally, we get on the subject of the gospel and church and kind of like, you know, what led us. He asked me, you know, how'd you find Mike? I still don't know how I clicked on Mike's website. It's
must have been the Holy Ghost. Holy Ghost.
Yeah, it must have been. But I'm going to tell you about the Holy Ghost here. Okay. So anyhow, we start talking, and I used to go to a Christian church. It's kind of a denomination. It's called, They call themselves Campbellites or something, right? And he said, I used to go to Christian church too. Okay. And we're talking a little bit. Matter of fact, we got this big, retirement home for people that belong to a Christian home in Canton. It's called the Canton Christian Home. He says, you ever been to Canton Christian Home? I said, no, not really. But so we find out that we actually belong to like the same denomination, right? And he says, I know some people in over there in Ohio. So he names his names, and one of the people he knows is one of my best friends. He used to be the youth pastor down at the church we used to go to. They know these people real good because this youth pastor's dad used to be their pastor at their church in Monongahela. So all of a sudden, actually, this youth pastor, when he got married, we were at the same wedding 15 years ago.
Whoa. You and Gio and Bonnie.
Me and Gio.
You were at
Beth, Gio and Bonnie.
You were at the same wedding.
We all ate at the Amish store together after this guy's wedding.
Wow.
15 years ago and didn't. Yeah.
Well, you know, oftentimes we have people ask us after they come into the gospel, where do I go?
Yeah.
Here's where you go, folks. You go to Gio Howell's house in Monongahela, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, ain't that crazy?
That is crazy.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, you know, we were like best friends. We had a really nice time.
I know you did. You experienced what we experienced at Mike's house with the Gospel Revolution Summit, what we experienced at the Gospel Revolution Conventions in Houston, what we experienced at the Gospel Revolution Convention in Calgary, and what we're going to experience at the Gospel Revolution Summit number 2 this coming weekend in Tampa.
I know,
it is unbelievable. These are people, folks. You got to understand, Tom and Gio had never met. They had never talked before. They were at the same wedding, but they had never met. But the gospel is the great unifier. I mean,
We had a ball.
That's awesome. And folks.
And the Steelers won.
And the Steelers won. Exactly right.
Yeah, it was great, man. We had a real blast.
All right. Well, Tom, we got to fly, but call early and often, okay? We're really happy to hear your voice.
I called earlier. I was trying to call at 9 o'clock, except I got invited to the
All right. Well, we're glad.
I got invited to the Temple of Praise.
Hey, Tom, don't be bashful, okay? We're really happy to hear. And tell Knappenberger we send our love, too, all right?
Okay, I will.
All right.
Love you, Tom.
Adios.
That was awesome.
Bye.
There's Tom Tonsky. We're talking about Tim Knappenberger, too. They are two gospel revolutionaries right there in Canton, Ohio. The postmaster of the gospel revolution. Tom is a postman, and he is delivering the mail in more ways than one. Well, we are up against the clock, Mikey, and I would be remiss not to read the latest Jackie Barnard poem. This will be
wonderful.
A perfect, yes it is. This will be a perfect closure tonight's Gospel Revolution webcast. Jackie sent this just the other day. So pay attention, folks, you're going to get saved. This is, what does Jackie call this? Hold on. Clouds, but no rain. Clouds, but no rain today. Just the same yesterday. Promises build above the rim, but no rainfall again. How like religion are the clouds? false prophets singing to their crowds, if you will go and give and pray, you will be blessed somehow, some way. Just be good and obey me. Tithe and don't forget to pay me. You'll be strong and you'll be clean and never have to fail again. The people beg and plead for mercy, yet their souls are always thirsty. Oh, listen, people, hear my words. The water is not in the clouds. Rivers flow within your belly. God himself is in your dwelling. Jesus made you one with him, imputing all his life to men. He took the ordinance away, that writing you could not obey. It was standing in the way to keep you from the light of day. Yes, Christ became complete fulfillment of the law that stood between. God said peace and no more war, and grace to all, though none deserved. The Father kept his promises that he would draw all unto him. On the cross, the Son was lifted. In him, we were crucified. In his body, all men cried, "It is finished." Then all men died. All of us wore the linen shroud. All of us were sealed in the tomb. Then after 3 days, death became our new birth. We were born again. Every man was included when the Father imputed perfect righteousness and inner knowledge. All things pertaining to life and godliness now in every soul is reigning. None have more and none have less. So turn your eyes to the life inside where dwell the living waters, and all and God are one. Jackie Barnard from Tennessee, soon to be from Arizona, the Poet Laureate of the Gospel Revolution.
Powerful. Thank you, Jackie.
What a beautiful way to conclude. But before we do, I have got to ask you, because I introduce this program and introduce you with your latest title as a Kentucky colonel.
Yes.
And you did not explain, because I did not ask you to. How did you become a Kentucky colonel, Mr. Michael Reverend Most Holy High William?
Well, that is something that is bestowed by the governor of the state and the secretary of state also. And I'm not really sure why they gave me that, but it's been, oh my gosh, 20 years ago. I was watching Johnny Depp on David Letterman the other night, and this new movie that he has coming out, he said that this guy had made him a Kentucky colonel who wrote this movie. And so they kind of were joking about what a Kentucky colonel is, and it's like, oh my gosh, I totally forgot. I'm a Kentucky colonel.
So we have Johnny Depp to credit with your remembering that you're a Kentucky colonel.
Yes, exactly right. I totally had forgotten about it. So now
I wonder if that's how Colonel Sanders got his name.
Yes, absolutely.
So
it's exactly the same way.
How's your fried chicken?
Non-existent.
Yeah, I know.
Now ask me how my sausage gravy is, and I'll tell you.
Well, everybody that attended the Gospel Revolution Summit in Houston got to sample it if they dared, because Michael made his famous sausage and gravy and biscuits, I think on Saturday morning, if I don't remember.
I did it both mornings.
You did it both mornings.
Yep.
Fresh? You did it fresh?
Yes. Both of them are fresh, yeah.
Well, Michael has alerted Carla that she better be cooking it up after the summit. Now, you guys that are thinking about or are coming to the summit, I'm telling you there are a lot of good places very, very close by the Days Inn at the Tampa Bay Airport to eat. But Carla has promised me, Michael, a very gourmet and Michael Williams-friendly a meal on Sunday night.
That means there's going to be lots.
There's going to be lots, and it's going to be good. I can
yeah.
promise you that. 1 week from tonight, allegedly, Michael will be in studio live with us. Cannot wait for that. Cannot wait for Michael and Sean O'Halloran, who have never met and have been working together.
I know.
On the Gospel Revolution, they've been working together for the last three-plus years, and they are actually going to see each other face-to-face, as we will all see him face-to-face eventually, if that prediction is accurate, and we believe it is. Whatever that means, that is going to be our reality after we pass from this life to forever. And although I have to say I'm not desiring to hasten that day, Michael, but I have no fear of it. I have to admit, on this particular Wednesday night, I have no fear of that reality.
It is nothing to fear for any human being on this planet, and that's the good news we share. And I really do believe, I mean, my heart's persuasion is that that information can transform this planet into a different place. We have religions that are imposing such horrible ideas on people of judgment and calamity and also reward. I mean, one of the number one things that produces a suicide bomber is in the religion of Islam. Is the promise, whether it's directly from Islam, it is certainly a sect of Islam that is teaching them this, that they will definitely go to heaven if they die a martyr's death. In fact, the only thing that I've ever been told in Islam that gives you an absolute guarantee of heaven is martyrdom. And then, of course, there's the virgins waiting for you and all of this. It is... You see, it doesn't make any difference whether it is a promise of reward or a threat of punishment. It is all mental illness.
Amen, brother.
We have our reward, and Jesus has his.
And not only is the threat of punishment and the promise of reward mental illness, but when you're healed or getting healed, which is, everything is a process. Salvation is a process. You can joke about these things. And you will hear humor on this webcast. You will hear humor on Michael's teaching CDs. You guys that are coming down to Tampa on Friday and Saturday, you're going to hear humor. We're going to laugh a lot, believe me. It's going to be, as Tom was relating his experience with G.O. Howell, Tom Tonsky, there's humor, there's laughter, there's joy. Carl and I were looking at a used car today, Michael, and there was a little sticker on the inside that was Arabic. And Carla joked that this was a jihad suicide bomber's practice car.
And they rejected it.
I said, honey, it didn't work. The practice did not work, which I'm happy to report. The car started, we drove a little bit, and, We're in the middle of negotiation for the 1999 Ultima, so we'll keep you posted, folks.
Yay,
Mikey!
Yes, man.
24 hours from now, we will have seen each other, and
I know that's true.
I know we'll have broken bread and hugged and stuff.
Yeah,
and that's
absolutely.
Oh my God, do I need this?
Yes, you know what too.
I unabashedly say, folks, I need the gospel. God, do I? And you know this is true, Michael. I needed this program. If you can get out, like Tom was talking to his buddy, recommend the webcast, recommend the website, recommend the CDs, recommend people talking to people who understand the gospel. This will save their soul. And saving your soul is a very good thing. It is. We cannot recommend you saving your soul more. It's not possible. You want a rational, vital, logical, mental disposition. You want to be reasonable. You want to be merciful instead of
merciless.
Merciless.
Yeah.
Mercilessness.
Mercilessness.
Yeah, thank you. Get the gospel into your head. And the way you do that is by talking about it, by hearing it, by... I mean, it's not that hard, but people are busy. And but this is, it's not a requirement for righteousness, Michael, but it is necessary for the salvation of our head.
Yeah, get your brain straightened out.
Exactly right. All right, Sean, you ready to meet Michael? He is.
Yeah, I'm ready for you, Sean.
He's ready for you. Mikey, travel safe.
Thanks, Glenn.
You know the TSA rules about, you know, like shampoo and stuff?
I got them all down. No gravy.
Yeah, you got to have 1.5 ounces is all you're allowed in a little plastic zip bag, and that's it.
And as they say in Tennessee, that ain't enough to nasty your mouth on.
I like that. All right, well, we cannot wait. We cannot wait for the summit. We cannot wait to see you beautiful humans that are on your way to Tampa. Even if you're just hearing this tonight, if you have any inclination at all to join us, call Jeff Robertson at the number that is at gospelrevolution.com, and come on down.
Yeah.
You be at home.
Love you guys. Thank you, Glenn, so much for tonight and everybody that's listened in and participated in every way that you do. It makes this effort so enjoyable.
No doubt. That's exactly a great way to describe it. Enjoyable. Want to thank the aforementioned Jeff Robertson for everything that he is doing and has done. Grant Miller from the great state of Indiana, Tom Tonsky from the state of Presidents, Ohio, for calling in. Gio Howell for hosting Tom and Beth Tonsky. Really appreciate that. And Bonnie, of course. And Richard Mull for prompting the latest inspiration for Michael that came via your email. Sean O'Halloran is the producer, engineer, and call screener extraordinaire, and is going to be... you're going to be there Friday night, right? All right. He's committed. His office is right there off of Dale Mabry.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to be there. You guys will get to meet Sean. You get to see us. You get to hear the gospel preached. And we cannot wait to join you again in 1 week's time when Michael will be in studio.
Yes.
What's that?
Well, Richard Mull says it's my microwave going off and that I eat all the time.
Wait. You were laughing too much. What did Richard Mull say?
Richard Mull says it is my microwave and that I'm eating all the time every time he calls. Actually, it is my cell phone, and actually, I just got a message. So.
All right. We know you're a popular guy. All right, so you don't have to brag anymore. Richard, it's not his microwave, it's his cell phone. We'll
mull these things over.
And that is the title of tonight's webcast, Mulling It Over. All right, so let us hear from you this week at freedom@gospelrevolution.com. Join the Facebook, check out the website at gospelrevolution.com, and join us next week as we continue right here on the road. Carla, I am on my way home, honey. Get that tea and honey ready. This is Glenn Klein. Until next time, saying shalom, everybody.